Let's go to Hong Kong now. We're joined by Ruchia Desai, Fund Manager, Asia Frontier Capital. And of course, as we've been talking about the trade headlines back and forth, the latest that, of course, we are looking at how much tariffs could or should be reduced in the initial phase of an agreement. When you look at managing funds, though, are you seeing these continuing trade tensions offering some challenges or some opportunities here?
Well, broadly, sentiment in Asia has been dominated by the trade talks for the last couple of months. In terms of opportunities and challenges, I mean, if you look at some of the frontier markets in Asia, some of the smaller emerging markets in the region, clearly they're benefiting from these trade tensions over the last year or so. So if you look at Vietnam, they continue to see increase in FDIs this year, especially in the manufacturing sector, which is all export-related. And also exports from Vietnam are growing by 8% so far this year, despite the rest of Asia showing negative growth or flat growth in exports. And Bangladesh as well has seen garment exports do pretty well this year with increased orders from the U.S. Due to the trade tensions with China.
So you mentioned a couple of those markets that are doing well. I want to get more on your thoughts perhaps in the next segment, but on the more macro front, what are you seeing in terms of, you know, the back and forth between the U.S. and China and whether or not we are going to be close to seeing a phase one trade deal?
Well, in terms of the macro, clearly export growth has slowed down in many of the markets, and that's affected overall GDP growth rates and also some of the other, you know, fiscal and current account issues that some of the markets face. But within the Asian frontier markets, you know, it's a mixed bag in terms of the macro situation. Vietnam has a very stable macro environment. They're getting a large amount of FDI. Exports are growing. They have a current account surplus. Bangladesh as well has stable macros. They've got a low debt to GDP, so no concerns over there. External debt is quite low. And in fact, the current account deficit has been reducing. On the other side, you have markets like Pakistan and Sri Lanka, which have had probably a poor macro environment over the last year or so, but that is improving now, especially in Pakistan with the IMF coming in, the currency devaluing. So that's kind of stabilized the economy over there. And also Sri Lanka, which has had a bit of a concern with respect to macro and also political issues over the last 1 year, has seen an improvement in the trade deficit. And also the elections, which just happened a couple of days ago, I think is very positive for sentiment in that market, and also could lead to better economic growth going forward as well.
Well, that's an interesting one because we were talking about the election result in Sri Lanka the other day here, and of course it sort of seems like it's turned back towards that pro-China government as well. Is there any concerns there that that could be antagonistic towards the West?
Well, I think if you look at the previous administration, which was pro-China, you know, the Mahinda Rajapaksa, who was the previous president, tilted more towards China, given the situation that the country found itself in after the war ended in terms of the geopolitics and the backlash towards how the war was conducted. But I think if you look at over the last few years, things have changed dramatically in Sri Lanka in terms of the foreign policy. Even the current administration, which is going to go out of power soon, has kind of balanced foreign policy between India, China, and some of the other powers in the region. And also, I think the incoming president, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, has stated that he would have a more balanced foreign policies. So I don't think, I mean, though there are concerns about a tilt towards China, I think the new government would be more balanced and more logical and more prudent in balancing all the foreign policy interests of the country.
So just very quickly, you're still adding a weight to your Sri Lanka fund?
Yes, we've been adding weight to our Sri Lanka exposure in the fund, given the valuations have been very cheap over the last couple of years. And, you know, with this political change, I think that's what the market was waiting for. So the current president has won a majority in the presidential elections. And, you know, given the way the political momentum is moving for him and for his party, I think they could also get a majority in the parliamentary elections coming up, maybe March next year. So that's a big positive for the country. So the issue which the country faced was coalition politics.
Yeah. So you're talking about Sri Lanka and, of course, the opportunities there, particularly after the election that we've just witnessed. But you've also increased your weight in Pakistan as well. Tell me why you're liking that area.
Well, a couple of reasons why we like Pakistan now from a 3 to 5 year perspective. So there have been some, you know, positive changes in the macro environment in Pakistan. The IMF deal has happened a couple of months ago, so that's what the investors are waiting for. It's given some kind of macro stability to the country. And also that gives investors confidence over future reforms. The foreign exchange currency, which was overvalued a couple of years ago, has depreciated by 40% since beginning of 2018. So that's what the investors are waiting for as well. So that's pretty much in the price now. The current account has, in fact, contracted significantly over the last year or so. In fact, on an annualized basis, the current account deficit has come down to about 2% of GDP compared to 6% a year ago. And it's, in fact, declining even more as we speak. And the interest rates have peaked so far. So the interest rates have increased significantly over the last 2 years. But now central bank held interest rates in the last meeting. And in fact, looking at the bond yields in Pakistan, interest rates could start getting cut from the first quarter of 2020. So I think because of that, I think, you know, cyclical companies which had really been beaten down in terms of valuations, I think look interesting from a longer-term perspective. So we like some of the names in the auto sector and also the cement sector. The valuations are looking very attractive.
When you look at perhaps the cycle changing again, what sort of strategy do you have there to try and get some strong returns?
Yeah, like I mentioned, I think cyclical stocks will probably outperform the market in Pakistan over the next year or so, given the fact that they've been completely underperforming the last couple of years. So far, the banks have performed quite well this year, but I think once interest rates are getting cut, investors will look at opportunities in the cyclical names. So some of the cement names, for example, trade at very, very discounted valuations on an enterprise value per ton of about $30, which is a big discount to the region, where the region trades at about $100 to $150 a ton. And also the auto sector, which are seeing margins bottom in the last couple of quarters. You're seeing opportunities there as well. So I think these two sectors will do well over the next couple of years.
When I look at some of your largest positions from the notes you sent us, you do have quite a bit of exposure coming through in Vietnam, which you touched on earlier. But tell me about Lien Viet Post Bank, because you're saying this is an undiscovered diamond.
If you look at the bank in terms of valuations compared to the other larger banks in Vietnam, most of the banks now trade at between 1.5 to 2 times price to book. This bank in terms of valuation trades at less than 1 times price to book. But in fact, it has one of the largest branch networks in Vietnam. And they also have a large post office network. So it's a combination of post office plus banking services. So they can leverage on this network to bring in the deposits, reduce the cost of funds, and also increase the exposure to some of the larger growing areas of the banking sector, such as consumer loans or SME loans, which have higher yields. So you could see some improvement in NIMS as well going forward. So that's the reason why we like it.